I'm Roses. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is 5/28/2012. Talk loud. My sobriety date is 5/28/2012. Can y'all hear me? Kind of? Okay, I'll try to be loud. I went in and out of facilities for a long time. The first was when I was 16. My parents sent me to a troubled teen school in Mexico. At first I was really angry. I didn't think I deserved that. It was very like military style, lockdown type of thing. And I was there till my 18th birthday. And I used that as fuel for a long time to drink and to have resentments. But I realized now through working the steps that they were desperate, and I was completely out of control. And they were afraid that I would die and either kill myself or kill somebody else. And while I didn't get any treatment there, it did keep me alive. So when I turned 18, they couldn't keep me there anymore. So I hitchhiked back home to California and just picked up right where I left off. Started drinking, started using right away. I was homeless, and being homeless is cute when you're 18, but it's not really cute for that long, I'll tell you that. And then began a series of in and out of halfway houses, and I was probably out more than in, but I went to a couple different halfway houses, one being Winter in Prescott when I was 21. I felt like I really didn't fit in there because they'd all been to jail or prison, and I thought they were all worse than me, and I did a lot of comparing myself to other people, a lot of better than, less than. The truth is I just wasn't ready to get sober. And so again, I'm grateful for that period, for keeping me out of danger for just long enough where I could go back and do it again. I did a couple more. I did one in, I was only a Winter for like 2.5 months before I decided to leave on New Year's Eve. That wasn't a great idea. A year later, I went to one in Mesa, Arizona. I stayed sober for 6 months, but the truth is I wasn't really working the program. I picked a sponsor who was an active pill popper. I kind of worked the steps. I kind of did a little 1, 2, 3, kind of some 4. But the truth is that I didn't want to put in the work, and I wasn't desperate enough. Again, it kept me off the streets just long enough, I think, to stay alive, because I was the kind of person who would end up in hospitals, in and out, wake up, covered in tubes and catheters and all these things, and not know how I got there, and the doctors would be begging me to stay, and I couldn't stay because I needed to go get drunk or high, priorities. Finally, it got so bad in 2008 is when it'd been like a year or so since I'd been in a halfway house, and my parents realized that I really needed something more. And I don't think that rehab is necessary for recovery. I know a lot of people do it without that, but I'm really grateful for that time there. I got a lot of help. I got a lot of like professional counseling, and I got the safety net of being protected for myself. Because I tried so many times to do AA on my own. I would go into meetings and cry and just be that person that makes a scene about like how I'm so sick and I need help, and then you wouldn't see me for a month. And I do it again. And so I'm grateful for this place. This place doesn't exist anymore, but I went to PS Place in Prescott, and It was great. I was safe. I got to look at myself. It was uncomfortable, and I hated every minute of it. But looking back, I can actually say that I really enjoyed it, because I made some really great friendships, and I learned about the steps, and I got a sponsor, and I got the additional help that I needed, because I needed extra help. That's just what I needed. So I had been there a couple months, and my therapist there was actually murdered, which is fucking gnarly. But she was murdered, and so they brought us all in, and they sat us down, and we're all... we're like, what's going on? Where's Carol? And they said that she was found dead that morning. And of course, me and my selfishness and self-centeredness was like, but I have a one-on-one with her today. Because, you know, I couldn't look past myself. You know, I couldn't look past myself. But and that was like, that was really traumatizing. So I stayed an extra month, and I got out in September of 2008. And that transition, I'll tell you, was really tough. I had to learn that I needed to really rely on the tools of AA in order to stay sober. I couldn't just be safe in this cocoon surrounded by people saying, you know, oh, don't go leave, don't go drink, you know, we want you here. I couldn't be like, oh, I'm sad, I'm gonna go do arts and crafts. I couldn't be like, you know, I'm just gonna like, you know, surround, I'm just gonna chain smoke and not have to work and not experience stress. You know, it was a big wake up call when I got out. Because it put my program to the test. I remember I had about 5 months sober, 1 month out of rehab, and I got a job working at Fry's in the bakery. And all of my coworkers were like old ladies on pills. And I remember there was many, many times I would cry and hide in the walk-in freezer and call my sponsor because I wanted to steal their pills. You know, I was just those temptations were all around me, and it was my job, and it wasn't like I was looking for it. But I had to learn how to be like, hey, I need a minute, and like walk out of the freezer crying and be embarrassed. But yeah, so it eventually got easier. I eventually realized that, you know, I get to choose my reality. You know, that job was a first job, but I decided later that I didn't want a place that would put me in that, those situations. Now it's not completely unavoidable 100% of the time, but I got to decide, like, I did not feel comfortable, like, being around alcohol because I had worked in lots of restaurants where there's alcohol. I decided that I didn't want to be around anybody that was popping pills, and I made that decision and changed my life. And now, I can comfortably say that, that when I'm around drugs and alcohol, I'm, I recoil away like a hot, from a hot flame, like they say in the Big Book. I'm not interested. Although what my sponsor told me is that that's grace, and I can't stay sober today on yesterday's recovery. If I think that just today, you know, because my brother smokes weed and he takes other things, just because, you know, I come home and he's smoking weed, and I'm okay and I don't want it, it doesn't mean that that's going to be okay for tomorrow. I need to constantly enlarge my spiritual life. I need to talk about it. I need to, you know, be open and say, hey, this is what I was exposed to today. This is how I felt. It was tough. And it was really, I think, probably another big thing was, like, the learning discretion. You know, as these guys know, I'm not a very discreet person, but I learned how to... I learned how to be discreet about my recovery. I thought that if I didn't tell every single person everything, that I was a liar. Because I was such a liar before I came in. Compulsive liar, lied about everything, lied even if the truth would serve me better. And I learned in here, I didn't have to tell everybody everything. You know, when people would say, like, I live in Flagstaff now, but when people would say, like, oh, why'd you move to Prescott? I didn't have to be like, oh, I went to rehab, you know, and just give them this whole spiel. I could be like, you know, I needed a change, or I needed something different. And that's that's okay, because that feels truthful to me, because that's the truth. Although I do disclose my my membership in AA when I feel like it'll help somebody, when I feel like it could be beneficial to another person, and you know, I can reach the hand of AA out to them, I do that. But I feel comfortable now. I've had jobs where you know, everybody in the office drinks, and they knew that I didn't drink, and my boss would make really awkward comments in front of everybody about alcohol, like, oh, hey, we're having tacos and tequila, except Rose's, she's just having tacos, or you know, various other things like that that would happen like at least once a week. But I learned to just be okay with it and smile and not have to get defensive and not have to explain myself, because the truth is that not everybody in the real world understands what addiction is. And it's not my job to teach each and every one of you. But if I can help, I'll do that. And so I think that's all I have. Thank you.
My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. And can you hear me in the back? All right, I'm going to try and keep this up, because I can be real loud, but I don't know how long it's going to last. I inadvertently became a part of Team No Sleep last night. I'm not about that. I'm like hardcore oldie pod, and I don't do like Team No Sleep anymore. But I'm in the struggle right now for real. So if I start just getting real dumbed down, a little sleepy, you just, I don't know, snap your fingers at me. I'll try and bring it back real quick. So I don't know that I necessarily have a lot of the same experience, or I know Chris asked me to speak on this panel yesterday, and I didn't do a ton of rehab. I didn't. It wasn't really an option. It's not how my story played out. I went to rehab one time, and it was outpatient treatment, and it was 28 days. And for me, my biggest part to talk about this topic is that bubble of coming out of rehab. And I didn't have a halfway house, and I didn't have a lot of the things that are available. I work in rehab now, so I like see it all the time. I'm encouraging people to do all this crap that I never did, you know? And I'm like, no, you need to do it. Trust me. And they're like, but did you? Like, no, but just do it. Because let me tell you, you probably save yourself a whole lot of heartache, a whole lot of sleepless nights, just like having somebody to tell you what to do. I got sober. My sobriety date is 7/107. I live here in Flagstaff. What else? I don't know. I have a sponsor. I sponsor a guy right now. I guess those are my credentials. So I somehow neatly evaded the whole getting thrown in rehab as a kid. You know, I never got put in rehab. If I ended up in the hospital from drinking or using too much drugs, or if I ended up in jail, anything like that, I always managed to come up with a cute little lie to make it seem like, yeah, I was kind of a bratty shithead, but I'm not that bad. You know, I'm like, it's okay. It's a phase. It's angsty teen something or another. I listened to one too many Blink-182 records. Like, it's cool. Don't worry about me. I got it. I'm going to figure out, there, I figured out how to use my stopwatch. All right. And so, you know, it came to a point where I ended up just getting thrown out of my family's house once everything came to light. You know, it was one of those bad scenes where I ended up in the hospital a couple times, and I'm like, no, I just ate some weird pills. I'm sorry, Mom. You know, I'm like on the stretcher. I'm in the ER or something like that. And then one day, you know, it's just like bus wide open. I OD. I got like bags of stuff everywhere. It was like empty bottles all around me. It's like dirty needles all over the place. And it was like the jig was up. And it was one of those, like, you know, well, hey, change or else, get out. And I was like, all right, I'll get out. And so I got out. I grew up in Chicago. I left. It was hard to stay. It was hard to have stick with the conviction of not having a home to sleep in Chicago. It gets cold there. If any of you are from the Midwest, it sucks. And so I just did whatever I could. You know, I tried crashing on any couch, doing all this stuff, and it just kept getting worse. I kept overdosing. Ended up in jail. I'm a multiple felon. I've had my heart shocked back into rhythm twice. I didn't really care. I never really cared about the consequences of my using, and I just figured this would be a problem. problem that would solve itself at some point. I'm not happy. Drugs aren't really helping me like they used to. But I OD on the regular. I end up in jail on the regular. At some point, this will work itself out. And that was firmly my belief. And it came to this point where I had this opportunity where I thought I had it licked. I got about 2 weeks away from doing drugs, from drinking. I got dragged to Alaska with a family member on a vacation. And I was so happy because it was the first time that I'd had some time away from all the drugs, from all the stealing, from all the lies, from all the BS, and I had all these like dreams and hopes about my new life when I get back to Chicago, and I've literally never had more. I've never exerted more will. I've never had more hope to do anything in my whole life. And I landed back in Chicago from Alaska, and I was sober for about 6 hours. I OD'd within 12 hours, and then that was it, man. I gave up. I'd put everything I had, every little like ounce of cheesy Hallmark moments I could conjure in my brain to try and get me on the road to this new life I wanted. I put it all there, man. It was all out. I used everything up, and I OD'd within 12 hours. I didn't think there was really any coming back from that. I was firmly convinced that I was powerless. I mean, this is the first half of my first steps, that I was powerless over drugs, I was powerless over alcohol, but I didn't know any sort of solution. And I don't really remember much about my last 9 months using and drinking, because really it was just like pure animalistic, get high, try not to feel. I wasn't trying to get drunk, I was trying to pass out. You know, I'm not trying to like get a cool little buzz from drugs, I'm trying to work that fine line between my heart stopping and me having open eyes and awareness of what's going on around me. And one day I realized that I figured I'd die sooner or later, something would happen sooner or later, and I was cool with that, but it just never happened. And I had this event where, you know, I decided to, like I'm sure plenty of people in this room have, it's not a unique story, I would solve the matter on my own terms. You know what I mean? Like, hey, not every time I fall out somewhere, every time I OD, some son of a bitch finds me and I wake up again in a hospital and I'm super upset about it every time. They get, you know, they try and sober me up, they got the charcoal, they got the Narcan. I hate both those things a lot. I'd had extensive experience with them. And I was tired of coming back, man. I just wanted to drift off, and so I decided I'd do it that night. You know, just typical way, I'm just going to go the overdose route and do a little bit more than normal. Believe me, at this point I'm familiar with how much it takes to OD. I'm a pro. And so I'm coming up with the plan, and I snuck over to my dad's house, and he's fighting with his wife, and he's drunk too, and I'm listening to them fight, and I'm drinking his beer, and it's just giving me a stomach ache, and nothing's working, nothing's making me happy. But I have this thought that ruins my entire plan. And I didn't realize how textbook or novel this thought is until I came into the rooms and I heard this stuff, that I was not the first person to have a life as bad as mine and get sober. I know it had to have happened before. And that ruined my night, because all of a sudden I wasn't nearly as much of a victim as I thought I was. All of a sudden the plan, the beautiful plan that I had made that had given me so much relief for the last couple minutes, now made me feel like a punk. And I didn't want to go out feeling like a punk, and it was as simple as that. Like, I don't know, you call it ego, call it whatever you want, but it's the only thing that kept me from going out and following through with my plan, because that was the only thing that gave me some real sense of relief. And so I sat there, and you know, and it was like, I'd seen a lot of people get off the dirty floor at the crack house, at the dope house, where all the drunks live, you know, in the house separated by curtains, and they go to rehab, and 28 days later, they're sitting right next to me again, still doing the same old thing. And so I never heard AA at this point, I never heard of rehab, I'd heard of rehab, but I had no faith in rehab, and I didn't know what to do. And I sat there, and I was like, well, I'm either going to go, and I'm going to find somebody who knows what they're talking about, and I'm going to do everything, or I'm not going to do anything at all. And it, you know, 2 hours later, I'm sitting there, and I'm just fighting with this. And at one point, I guess I go 51-49, I'm getting sober versus killing myself. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't jumping for joy. I wasn't, like, shouting, you know, to God, save me, help me. There was, like, nothing. It was just, like, I guess. But that commitment was there, that if I was going to do it, I was going to do it all, because I couldn't stand to live those couple days and the kind of agony I felt only to come back to this original plan. I couldn't stand the idea of living days that were going to be futile anyway. And so I called my mother, And I don't know how, because I was like half an hour away. But you know, like every mother who's just been waiting for that phone call for years, she comes like tires screeching on the minivan, squealing around the corner. She did the 30-minute drive in 7.5 minutes, you know, like broke every single traffic law there is probably. She had like this whole kit ready, you know, like brake in case he wants to get sober. And she was there, and she picked me up, just threw me in a hospital. And the next day, I looked around, and I asked around, and I'm like, where can I go? What can I do? I'm sitting in this detox unit, and they got me all messed up. They're like trying to set me up, hook me up on dialysis. I'm like falling apart. I was 18 years old. And this doctor comes in who's supposedly the best addictionologist. I've been working in rehab for years now. I still don't know what an addictionologist is. I've never met a single one since that guy. And he comes in and he tells me, and I'm like, I think I need rehab. And he's like, yeah, I think you need rehab too. And he tells me that he just lost funding and he doesn't have an inpatient program and he only has an outpatient. And my mother's all worried, and she's like, well, what should he do? Should he go to outpatient? Should he go to inpatient? I mean, he's pretty bad. Look at him. And he was like, you know what? His kidneys are failing. He's like 30 pounds underweight. He's OD'd several times in the last couple months alone. If he doesn't get sobered, he's probably going to die by the end of the summer anyway. And he said it with such a casual nature that I was like, damn, this guy's for real? I like this guy. And so he admitted me to his outpatient program because he thought it'd be good for me, you know, to face the things that bother me on a day-to-day basis, to see the junkies that swing by my house and offer to pick me up on the way to the dope spot, because I was either going to deal with it or I wasn't. And I had made that commitment that night when I decided to get sober, that I was going to do whatever the hell I had to do. So finally I get into this guy's rehab, and he sits me down in his office one day, and he's the best addictionologist. So in my mind, he's a scientist. I don't know anything about AA, remember that. So I sit down with this scientist, and I expect him to, like, I don't know, give me some electroshock therapy, stick some pins in my arm, do whatever the hell he has to do, I don't care. And he just tells me that he was a med student turned brain surgeon turned heart surgeon turned pill junkie who tried to drown himself in Lake Michigan, and some people dragged him out and he went to rehab, and when he got to rehab they said go to AA, and he told me, you're in rehab, go to AA. And that was it. I had some groups during the day, a couple hours. I went for about 6 hours a day. And I went to some groups and I got to meet some other people who were trying to get sober. And what I remember most about rehab is that those counselors were great, and I loved them. I loved them a lot. They introduced me to some new ideas. They introduced me to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That treatment center saved my life by pointing me in the right direction. But one day I went in to have a meeting with that guy, the addictionologist, and I walk out there, and he told me, he said, hey, isn't this smoke break time? And I was like, yeah, I think it's smoke break, but this is our one-on-one. We only got one a week. And he said, just go for the smoke break. Most of the recovery that happens in this place happens out in the parking lot with you smoking cigarettes with the other guys who are in this rehab. And he was right, because I found fellowship within those guys. You know, within that group of guys, we all made a commitment to stay sober. And we made those commitments to stay sober, sitting around, shooting the shit, smoking cigarettes in the parking lot. And because I became comfortable in that environment, I became comfortable sitting outside of an AA meeting, smoking cigarettes, shooting the shit with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going to a bunch of meetings, and pretty quickly some guy just snatched me up and he said, I'm your sponsor. And I didn't really have much choice in the matter, it seemed, so I had a sponsor. And at the end of that, I didn't have the option to go to a halfway house, and I decided I would try to go to community college, which, if you think you're a good student, go ahead, but let me tell you, it didn't work out great for me. I showed up like the first day, and I like damn near pooped myself. I was so nervous. I was so scared of people. I don't know what I thought I was doing there. Like, by the second day, I couldn't even open the door to go in. And this was like my exit plan, you know? Like, I'm gonna go to college. I'm really gonna make something of myself. Turns out I sat at the Alano Club for 16 hours a day, literally like every day for the first 60 days I was sober. And and this is, you know, and this is like what I had to do for my transition, because I got out and I had some structure in my day in rehab. They told me where to go. They told me what to do. They made me get signatures to prove I had done it. They drug tested me. They gave me good advice. But then one day the doors opened and I was out. And I didn't have much follow-up. And I don't know that it... I think some support is good, but at one point the doors just open and it's on you. And your recovery is now, has always been your responsibility, but now you're the one who has to fully maintain it all day. And I didn't have a support network besides Alcoholics Anonymous, and so all I did, the only thing I could do, which was sit in the Alano Club all day long. I probably smoked 3 packs worth of bummed cigarettes every day and drank 2 pots of coffee and ate very little food. But I read a lot of that big book. That's what I did. I went to a... my home group was this men's stag meeting, and we had a working step group. And within that group, a bunch of like guys who had some time and a bunch of newcomers all sat around, and you worked the steps not only with your sponsor, but with like basically all his buddies. And so you got a lot of direction, and it was run by like mean old curmudgeons with like stereotypical old-timey nicknames like Pete the Butcher and 10 Steps Terry and just like all this like really stereotypical old school AA. And they just gave me a ton of crap. And I got feedback not only from one guy, but a bunch of other guys. And after I'd been there a couple weeks, you know, like another new guy came in, and I had like, you know, a month and a half, and he had like 2 weeks or something. And I started working with that guy. And for me to stay sober just getting out of rehab, the greatest thing that I ever did was to work with a guy who was just slightly newer in the journey than I was. And it says in the big book that nothing will ensure sobriety more during those first days of convalescence is work with another alcoholic. And that's what kept me around. That's what gave me some purpose in early sobriety. It's the only thing that made me really feel like I had a place here and that I had to stick around, because I just started talking to some guy who had 2 weeks of sobriety, and I remember what 2 weeks of sobriety felt like. And I needed to share about how I got to 3 weeks of sobriety and 4 weeks of sobriety and what I was doing sitting in the Alano Club all day, smoking too many cigarettes. And I hung out there and I scrubbed the floors and I cleaned the ashtrays and I did all that stuff. And I believe strongly in that. And if you have the opportunity to do that in some sort of like structured living environment, that's awesome. Because that's what I ended up making for myself. And so rehab is great. And you learn a lot of skills. And if for some reason you're not there anymore, you're going to have to like implement that same structure for yourself. And the greatest thing that happened to me that I can just impart is justifying the guy who's slightly newer than you. And make your primary purpose. Make you get up in the morning because that guy needs help. And that made me feel awesome. So I can't think of too much else to talk about. I think I'll just close it with that. That's it.
I'm Keenan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm just going to look at the time. And thank you both for sharing. I think this is a really awesome topic because this seems to be a pretty prevalent thing going on in the young people's community of Prescott and Flagstaff and Phoenix and all that. So I think this is a really good panel. You both had really awesome shit to say. My sobriety date is November 8th, 2012. Before that, I was an absolute miserable, suicidal shell of a kid, you know? I remember I would wake up every day, and just like Chris, you know, I'd be pissed off that I'd woken up again that day. Every interaction with anyone and anything scared the shit out of me, and there was no way that I could function as like a normal human being. From what I learned later is because of my disease of alcoholism. I mean, what the disease of alcoholism looks like for me is basically that. It's just that fear of everybody and everything, and not wanting to face anybody. And the only relief that I had found from that was alcohol and drugs for quite a while. And those two things, or several things, completely wiped away that feeling of uselessness, isolation, self-pity. it pretty much eliminated that for me. So to have found something like that for me was like a pretty big fucking deal, you know? To wake up and no longer want to kill myself because I had a solution to what was going on was like a pretty big deal. And that's just the way it was for a while, you know? Like Chris, there had been a bunch of near-death, not near-death experiences, but times when I had been close to death, you know? And I absolutely think I needed every single one of those to get to where I am today. I think I'd been to probably like 4 inpatients and outpatients and whatever the hell it was, you know, trying to make me all better. And I went to AA, I went to NA for probably like 4 years before I was given a first step, you know, before the program clicked for me. I guess before I even really worked it, you know, I just kind of would show up with like a bottle in the car or a needle in my pocket and just be horrified and miserable, you know. I came to Prescott actually in 2012, and I was extremely fortunate. I got a sponsor who was all about the steps. You know, he was like, "You can go to as many meetings as you want, but that's not what's going to keep you sober." You know, it was 100% and still is about the steps for me today. You know. And so, like, for me, just, I don't know, I'm kind of going to skip ahead a little bit, but transitioning from my halfway house out into the real world, if you want to call it that, it was, like, a fairly easy thing because I had already learned that, like, all I need to do to stay sane and happy and not want to kill myself anymore is work these steps and practice the principles in every area of my life. I think there's like a huge misconception, especially among young people in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, whatever it is that you want to do, they both work fantastically. There's this big misconception that like you get sober and like you are just doomed to a life of working the steps and a life of mediocrity, you know? And that's absolutely not the way it has to be. I know so many, and I'm going to tell you about them too. I know a bunch of people who have extremely cool fucking lives today, all because they work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. For instance, I've got a buddy. It's a little unorthodox, his story, but it needs to be heard because he's in Alcoholics Anonymous and he's working the steps every day, and he's a great guy with a great program. He got sober, and then at about like 4 years sober, he started just kind of traveling the country, working various jobs. He just wanted to travel for a little bit, you know. And he was just doing the next indicated thing, the next thing that was put in front of his path. And it just so happened that one of the next indicated things was working on a pot farm in Oregon. And so he's been doing that on and off for like 3 years. And I know it sounds fucking crazy, like, oh my God, I'm going to get sober and you're telling me to work on a pot farm, you know? Absolutely not. I'm just telling you to do the next indicated thing. But for this guy, that was it. So what he does is he manages his pot farm in Oregon for harvest season or whatever that is. I don't know. I've never really liked that shit. But and then for the other part of the year, he just travels. And I actually was lucky enough to go to Thailand with him and 5 other of my really close friends, all sober guys. I think I had the least amount of time with like 2 years at the time, and the most amount of time was like 10 years of sobriety, you know. And we just went to Thailand for a month, and we absolutely destroyed that country. It was out of control. It was the coolest experience I've ever had in my life. And the whole entire time, I mean, yeah, we went to meetings, you know. Meetings are a great place to meet like-minded people. And so we went to meetings, and they were all English-speaking meetings. Got to some in, like, Bangkok, Chiang Mai, some other places, and it was extremely cool to see, like, people from all over the world just doing Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And it's nuts. I still can't believe what we were doing out there, you know. We just, like, rented dirt bikes and did, like, a 200-mile loop and just partied sober for, like, a month. It was insane. And I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry if it sounds like I'm bragging, because I am bragging, and it has nothing to do with what I've done for myself. It's all what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, you know? All I do is wake up, and I do what my sponsor says every single day, which is read a part of the big book that kind of outlines what's going on with me and what my my plan of action for the day is to stay sober and happy and make my life as cool as fucking possible. So that's really all I do. About probably a year and a half, two years ago, I decided that I wanted to do wildland fire. So I talked to my buddy who's a firefighter, and I took a class, got certified to do that, and then I busted my ass trying to get a job, and I worked up in Montana last year. I moved to a town of about like 400 people, and there wasn't an AA meeting for 200 miles, so I didn't get to one the entire time I was out there. But my day was constantly filled with a 10 step, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, you know, and just trying my best to stay sane and happy just for that day, you know. And it was a badass experience. I met a lot of cool people. That got me interested in becoming an EMT to, I wanted to be like a wildland fire medic, you know, and travel around and be a paramedic on a fire crew. And then I started the class to become an EMT. Then I worked on an ambulance for like 6 months, you know. And that was incredible. My whole life, my plan was to like, I was always pretty good at school, you know, so my plan was to go to school, get my undergraduate, go to med school, become a doctor, you know, the whole thing. And for the longest time, that was just nowhere near possible, you know. I remember the first time I took a crack at my undergraduate, I would never go to class. I mean, I went to class maybe like one or two times, and then I would show up for the final and do coke in the back of the big lecture hall and get like a C on my final, which was okay, you know, but it was, I was still at that point like a miserable, disgusting human being. And so after working as an EMT for the last 6 months or whatever it's been, I decided somewhere along the line that it was time to go back to school and fulfill what I wanted to do, you know, and that's why I just moved up to Flagstaff. I'm going for a biomedical science undergraduate degree with a plan of going to med school after that. And again, that has nothing to do with any of my plans or like what I set out to do in sobriety, you know. This was all just like work the steps today and figure out what the right thing to do is for today, and then the next thing that's put in front of me that seems like the right way to go is the course of action that I took. So I just want to emphasize again the importance of, I mean, obviously meetings. You're going to get a lot of people who are going to tell you, like, this is the way that it needs to look when you're once you get sober, after you leave treatment, especially in the treatment centers. The people are going to tell you, like, this is what you have to do. This is the way it's got to look. But fuck all that. Absolutely none of that's true. What you need to do for yourself is figure out what's working for you today to keep you sober and happy. And whatever your like biggest desire in life is, whatever makes you the happiest, you need to go and follow that fucking dream. Because for me, if I had just stayed like working in treatment or you know, working at the golf course because I got free golf and that's pretty cool, you know, like, or working at a job where like, oh, it's cool because I, like, I've had a couple jobs where I explain to people like, oh yeah, it's pretty good because I don't have to do anything at all, you know, and that sucks, dude. I don't want any part of that. What I want is what like the people, my friends before me have, which is like really cool fucking lives, you know. So every day I wake up, whether it's like the smallest little thing that I can do for my goals and my aspirations, whatever it is, I do something every single day to get to where I want to be, you know? And in turn, it just makes my life, the whole process, it makes it awesome, you know? It doesn't have to be this just like boring, I've got to go to AA and listen to speakers and, work in the steps sucks and all this. It's, no, that's blown. Yeah, so I have, I also have a friend who decided to move to San Francisco, and he pays like I don't know if you guys know how expensive it is to live there, but he pays like $100 a month to live on this guy's roof in San Francisco in a tent. And he is like doing the bicycle taxi thing around there. And he's like going to film school. He's getting his master's in film now. This other buddy who moved to Australia to finish up his neuroscience degree up there. I don't know. I get so frustrated, and I'm sorry if I sound opinionated, but I just get so frustrated with the idea that like there's just like a right way to do this thing, you know? Because there's absolutely not. Even with like whatever your I don't know, whether you're into guys or girls, you know, like all these, there's all these suggestions, there's all these people telling you which way is the right way, how your sex ideal is supposed to look. And I don't believe in any of that either, because the only thing that the big book says about sex relations is not to tell other people what to do in that area, you know? So if people are going to be judging you, if people are going to be telling you what to do in any area of your life, for me it's been important to seriously take a look at like what this person's got, you know? So, for instance, this guy is telling me that like the way I'm conducting myself with women is extremely blown, you know? And I'll be like, okay, well, this guy is absolutely nowhere where I want to be, you know? And so I can just discard that, and I can find somebody who's got like a cool ass life, and I can go and listen to what he has to say, you know? It's important not to judge yourself over this shit, because not even the co-founders of this program knew the right way to do it. They were just fumble fucking along like every one of us too, you know? So yeah, that's all I got. Thank you.